Good afternoon. I've been told that we are ready to get started, so let's just go. Hope everybody is having a good time at the conference. We're here to talk about Agile. So quick raise of hands, how many people were at my Agile talk on Tuesday? Wow. All right, so we got about 60%+. So just kind of level set, this is a tools talk. That doesn't mean I'm not gonna talk about process. For the majority of the time, I'm gonna basically be introducing, I'm not gonna go into the nitty gritty of Agile, I'm assuming you understand the basics of Agile. If not, we can definitely have a talk a little bit afterward. But I'm gonna basically go through some of the basic problem statements, and then as quickly as possible, I'm gonna get right into demos. And we're gonna go through 40+ minutes or so of demos ranging from how teams use the Agile tooling all the way through how you can customize those, both at the team and at the project level. So we'll do high level, we'll do deep. If we have time, we'll even get into some REST APIs and talk about our extensibility that way and have some fun. And at the end, the last 15 or so minutes, I'm gonna do not a repeat, but kind of a recap and a summary of the stuff that I talked about on Tuesday for those that were not there. And I'll also give it a little different spin talking about it a little and grounding it a little more in the tools and talk about how we as an organization have used the tools specifically. And frankly, for all of my demos, I'm going to, well, I should say all, for 99% of my demos, I'm gonna actually show you my team's backlog and how my team is using Visual Studio Online and our actual stuff. So don't take anything you see here as a commitment of data features that are coming. This is stuff we're working on, and I'm trusting you guys to take that with a grain of salt, because plans change even every sprint, as you may know. So let's get started. And of course, questions. There are some people with mics. There might be a mic somewhere in the room. If you have a question, interrupt me. I'm absolutely happy to stop my flow and answer your questions. If it's something really nitty-gritty about your team, I'll definitely stay after and we can have conversations there. And if we need to, I'm happy to set up a meeting with you in the next day, because I'm still in Barcelona. And if you want to have a half-hour chat with me about, hey, here's the problems of my team, totally happy to consult a little bit and give you some of my advice, and you can do what you want with it. So anyways, with that, let me get my clicker. I'm Justin Marks. I'm from Miami, Florida, originally. I came to Microsoft right out of college, and I've been there 12 years. This is my new home. Seattle is where I met my wife. It's where I've got my two kids. It's where my mother-in-law lives. I'm not going anywhere. So this is really a place I love, and I've been kind of around the block at Microsoft in my 12 years. I first came in as a systems engineer, so I got to see what it was like from the operations side of running MSN.com's day-to-day operations. I then went into Windows, and I was a tester for 5 years and a test lead, and worked my way through there through the Vista product cycle and the Windows 7 product cycle. And then I moved into Visual Studio, where I became a PM. And I worked on features like IntelliTrace in the Visual Studio product. That was my first baby. And then I worked for actually five releases, essentially, now. Five of the big box releases in the TFS product. So I've gotten to do a lot of different things in different disciplines, which has given me a pretty cool perspective, because I've got to have been in the engineering side, the operations, and the planning and project management side. So it's been kind of cool for me. As I told everybody in the last session, I'm a big foodie. So whenever I'm not at Microsoft, I'm eating. So this has been a really, really fun trip for me. I've had a lot of food. So I've left the convention center for basically every single day to get into town, try something. 9 o'clock at night is a great time to go have dinner here, which I love. So that's been a lot of fun. So what is our agenda today? Well, let's first start talking about Visual Studio itself and the journey we've been on. We have, as I talked about on Tuesday, gone through a journey ourselves of discovery of how we are going to be agile. We've moved from our 2005 and 2008 and 2010 products, where we were a very waterfall organization. 2 to 3 year ship cycles, huge planning up front, major, major milestones for execution, and then cycle, rinse, repeat. And it was disheartening as an individual being on that team where I couldn't get my value out to the customers. And it was disheartening to customers because when you found bugs, when you had features you wanted, when you found issues, we couldn't really do anything in a timely manner. And between both of those interpersonal issues inside the company, as well as the market opportunities and our customer value statements, we said we need to change something. And we basically transformed the entire developer division into being an agile organization. So we're now went from shipping every 3 years to shipping every year for our box product. And on top of that, we also started to ship quarterly updates. So every 3 months, we're able to give new value to our customers. And of course, we also released the service. So Visual Studio Online came on board. And we started shipping every 3 weeks. And every 3 weeks, we're in, this is, I think it's the first week of Sprint 74. You'll check me when I actually show you my backlog. But we have done this 74 times three. We've been going sprint after sprint. We started at sprint one, we've moved to 74 now, and we've been just doing this nonstop. And every sprint but two, and the two once fell over Christmas and one fell over Thanksgiving, were the only times we didn't do a deployment. Other than that, we've deployed new value every 3 weeks on the service, which has been eye-opening for me as an engineer on the team, learning how quickly I can get feedback and actually react to it. So it's been a really, really cool adventure for us. And Agile's been a process and a set of tools that we've used to go help us on that journey. So today, there's obviously a lot of stuff in the Visual Studio arena. We're going to really focus on Agile. I'm assuming you've used TFS before. I'm assuming you know what a work item is, so I don't need to talk about the basics of querying and things like that. If not, again, we can have a conversation afterwards. But I'm really going to focus on the Agile tooling and how we've used backlogs and boards and tags and Kanban charts to help us build a first-class experience on top of our work item underlying system. So let's just get into what are the problem statements, and the sooner we get through that, the sooner we get into demos. So what is the problem? There are many teams in the organization, and those teams need to manage their work. And the way you do that in the Agile way, whether you're Agile or Scrum or Safe or Lean or Kanban, is through a backlog. So we needed to be able to give you the tools you needed to be able to prioritize your work, create that work, and then be able to start working off of that work. And that's where the backlog came in. But when we started just with simple backlogs, and yes, we put teams into the product, yes, we put backlogs, we noticed a problem, and that's the stakeholders. Now, the stakeholders themselves are not the problem, although some people here might disagree with that. But the reality is the stakeholders really wanted to be able to have not oversight, but visibility and transparency into everything that was going on across their organization. What's on my backlog is mine. It's my team. I get to control that backlog. But it rolls up to a higher purpose. If you're in the Safe world, that's the idea of epics. If you're in Scrum or Kanban, there might be initiatives or other things along those lines. And all of the work on your backlogs do roll up. So we need to come up with a way to show that and to represent that. Fortunately, Work Item System had linking built into it from day one. We've always had parent-child relationships, so we could build a hierarchy. But we wanted to build a first-class experience around that as well. And that's where we came up with portfolio backlogs. The ability to have backlogs at the team level, as well as backlogs at a higher level, rolling up that work so you can see what everything is built on top of. And those, of course, are just work item links under the hood. It's no different if I add a work item and add a parent to it, that's no different than using the first class experience. And because of that, you automatically get all the value of our reporting roll-ups, you get the value of our querying, etc. In addition, we realize that not all teams are created equal. Not all organizations are created equal. Some teams need different levels of roll-up. Maybe you want to have a group of teams working together on a specific feature, and those features all work together to create a product, and those products work together to create a suite of products or a portfolio. We need to make sure that our Agile tooling supported those scenarios. And because of that, we allow N levels, where N is really 7. And if you want to do more than 7, we can have a conversation, because that's getting a little nuts. But hey, every organization is different. Who am I to judge? So we do support N levels of our portfolio backlog, and you'll see that today. And we'll actually go in depth and get into the nitty-gritty command line tools where you can expand your backlogs and be able to customize and add new levels. So we'll show you what that looks like today. But we do support 7 levels of backlogs inside of our tooling. But at the end of the day, it's really about the team. We need to make sure the teams are autonomous. We want to make sure that they control their own destiny and they control the work that they're doing. Yes, the organization, the project managers in the larger sense of the world are going to have some oversight in terms of having a standard workflow, putting different terminology that is shared across the organization. But sometimes it breaks down. My organization, for instance, has a pretty simple state model for a story, a user story on our backlog. We have new, active or proposed, committed, and done. That's it. What if I want to know it's ready for testing? What if on my team we care about ready for deployment or device tested or all these specific workflow specific areas that my team cares about? We want to make sure TFS allows you to do that as well. And we have a lot of features that allow you to do specific team-based customizations in the grander scheme of the overall project. Because really what it is about letting a team be autonomous. And there's a great book I like to, this is in English, unfortunately, so it's going to, I don't know what the translation situation is across the world, but there's a great book I like to point out called Drive. And in it, they really talk about what motivates teams. How are individuals excited to come to work every day? Is it really, most people are not, yes, of course you want to get paid. There's no doubt in the world. I always want more money than I got yesterday. But that's not what keeps me coming back for more. That's not what's kept me at Microsoft for 12 years. What's kept me is these three things. First and foremost, the ability to be autonomous, get to make my own destiny, be able to tell management, I'm here at the conference, I'm talking to people about Agile, I know what they're asking for, I want to go build that. I don't want to have some person in an ivory tower telling me exactly what our customers want. That's not the way things work. I want to be able to direct my own initiative there. Second, I want to be able to be a master of what I do. I want to be an expert in the field of Agile. I want to be able to get up to Kier in front of you in the community at large and be someone you can actually talk to about Agile and have credibility behind it. I don't want to be a very surface component level person where I treat every developer like a cog and I can easily switch them back and forth between different teams and different features and, hey, a bug is a bug, they can just fix it. I'm not saying they're not smart enough, but that's not exciting for them. My developers want to get good at something. I have people that want to be SQL experts and want to know everything there is to know about SQL. And I have people that care very passionately about reporting, and they want to know how the Microsoft BI stack works and how to write MDX queries. Who those people are very limited, but still, they want to get good at what they know. And teams need to, and organizations need to allow teams and individuals to do that. And lastly, there has to be purpose to what you do. I don't want to be working on the P10. I want to be working on the P0 work. I want to be doing the stuff that really matters, not just to my customers, not just to me, but to the organization as a whole. And you want to make sure teams have all three of these three things to be motivated to do their best work. And that's Agile is, again, a tool that helps us allow us to do these types of things. But again, it's just a tool. Everything I'm going to show you here today is a tool. It is not there to solve world hunger. It is not going to solve every problem for everyone. And you have to remember these. At the end of the day, they're people, and we have to use the tools to help us do our jobs. So going back to the team, what are some of the team-level customizations that we allow? Well, first, we allow Kanban columns. We allow teams to extend the workflow or elaborate the workflow and add specific Kanban states to their representation, to their boards, to let them represent the work that they need to do. And that can go as far as doing pull and queue models to I just want to rename the states because I don't like the word approved and I want to put it in my localized language. All of those things are things we allow. And of course, it still allows the same reporting and roll-up, so our project managers at the higher levels still see everything on equal footing, so you're comparing apples to apples. Next is tags. One of the common questions we hear is like, hey, there's one additional field I want. My team really cares about the idea of is something blocked or not. How am I supposed to represent that if my TFS administrators has locked down the work items and only put 12 fields in there? What am I supposed to do about that? How do I add additional information to say this is a development task versus a QA task? Tags is our answer for that. Tags is very similar to other work item systems. You're able to add simple keywords. You're able to add those at the project level, so you can add them as many different work items as you want, and you're also able to filter and query off of them. So it's a very cheap customization that you can do across all of your work items. And we've done a lot of work, and we plan on doing a lot more work on showing how tags can be valuable to the teams. And lastly, visualization of progress is incredibly important to the teams. We have tons of different charting built in. We have dashboards built in that allow you to see how your team is doing, to measure the metrics you care about and not ones that somebody else tells you are important. What's on my dashboard is different than on the team next to me's dashboard. Each of us have different things that we're going to track in different ways, and we're going to show in our demos how the lightweight charting as well as our agile charting, and then you can imagine what we're going to do next, allow you to actually build your own custom dashboard for your team so it's something you can look at day in, day out. So, that's a whole bunch of verbiage. Any questions on any of that stuff, or do you want to just get into the product itself? Good, that's what I thought. All right, so I'm going to go behind the podium here and switch over, and we're going to start talking about our product. So, what you're looking at here is our backlog. Pretty simple backlog. ignore aside for a moment, close that. One of the things we allow in our backlog is obviously visibility. So it's very clear what the order of our work is based on the hierarchy of those work items. The flat list, number one's got to come first, and then two, et cetera. And it allows my team to actually see what the priority of the work is. And of course, as a project administrator, I can go in and add, or not a project administrator, as a team member, because frankly, it's not locked down to anybody, I'm able to go out and work. Oh, one thing I didn't mention, which I'm going to, I might as well mention now. Most of my demos are going to be off of Visual Studio Online. So obviously, all the functionality exists in Visual Studio Online. Having said that, 99% of what we're showing today also exists on-prem. So unless I say otherwise, assume everything I show works for both your on-premise TFS in the latest version or the on the hosted version. Both of them are on equal footing. A couple of the individual features are coming in the latest quarterly update, quarterly update 4, which we just came into the release candidate. I'll try to point those out. But if you have any questions, by all means, ask me, keep me honest, and I'll make sure I let you know which products and in which flavors and in which years and releases these features are there. But for the most part, it should just be there the same for everyone, unless I say otherwise. So here I'm on my backlog. We use user stories on our team, so I can go add more user stories to my backlog. So let's start with a simple one. Welcome to TechEd. I'm sure my team's going to love it when they see new work at the top of their backlog. And I add that story, and now that is the first story on my backlog. But welcome to TechEd is probably not the most important work that all of my team members are going to work on right now, so I obviously need to have a way of reprioritizing my work. And you can do that very simply using drag and drop operations. And of course, we have keyboard accessibility as well. So I can click and I can move that story anywhere I want on my backlog, et cetera. So pretty simple. Obviously, we have customization in terms of the columns. So right now, these are the 7 or 8 columns that my team cares about. But I can go into my column options and I can add any column I'm interested in. So if I want to see, let's say, my activity column, which I don't actually think is filled in, I can go add that. And now my view is going to be updated just like a query would to show the additional column of data. And that's unfortunately off the screen. And of course, there is no data there. So anyway. The other thing is that these are just work items, no different than the work items you've used for the last 5 releases that we've had. So you can go into those work items and open them up, and you can add as much detail as you want. So we have rich text capabilities inside of your description field. So I can say, hello, TechEd. I can bold things. I can add lists, agenda. I can add bulleted lists there. Blah, 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 blah. So this is a pretty rich way of me describing my work item. And actually, my team has moved away from specs. We don't have formal Word documents any longer that describe the work that has to be done. I actually fill out these details, and this is where I put my acceptance criteria as a product owner. This is where I go put the details. I'm not saying we don't have specs at all. We absolutely still care about specs, but those things are more visual specs, and they're things that we actually write in PowerPoint now using our PowerPoint storyboarding toolkit inside of Visual Studio. We're not going to go write large Word documents. I want as much information in this work item as I possibly can to describe that work. That allows the team during planning to actually have context on what's going on. It allows me, the product owner, to disappear for a week at TechEd and have planning still go without a hitch because people have the context they need to make the decisions. Of course, I can add attachments and add files and things along those lines. I can assign work to different people, change the state, etc. It's the same work items that we've always had. The difference is that we're now storing that inside the larger backlog, which is just a query under the hood. It's just a query made up per team, and the team chooses which area paths that they want to be incorporated. That's really the definition of a backlog. It's a set of work item types under a set of area paths. Pretty simple way of extending what we already had inside of TFS. Now, for most teams, this is enough. I can make a single to-do list. I can order it up and down as much as I want, and I'm in great shape. But some teams want to do more. Some teams actually want to support a sprint-based system where they want to have sprintly execution where sprints can be whatever number of weeks they want. We choose 3 weeks, and we actually support that as well. So if I open up Backlog Explorer, you see that I've actually adopted a bunch of different sprints. And this is actually, I might as well show you through our settings UI. If you go to your settings UI as a team administrator, you can choose not only the areas that I was talking about before, about what areas do my team actually participate in. And this is the invent team, so all of the areas of one area. We have a single area path tree that basically mimics our organizational hierarchy. That's how we've chosen to do it. But I also can choose the iterations. So while the organization schedules the iterations, and they say, these are the different sprints, these are the different dates on those sprints. The team is the one that gets to make the choice of which of those sprints are they going to participate in. And you can see that we've even extended our sprints to individual weeks, because some teams inside of our larger organization do weekly sprints instead of three-week sprints. Totally want to support that, and our tools allow us to do that as well. And that's an important thing. One of the nice things that we love about TFS, other than the fact that we make it and we make money off of it, is the fact that it's pretty customizable. So my organization can set the standard and kind of level set the entire organization, saying we are all going to be on the same three-week sprint, which is a great thing to do. But at the same time, individual teams can opt in or opt out of that process, and they can opt in or out of expanding on that process by adding additional sprints to it. So we do support both the organizational view as well as the individual team view there as well. So looking back here, now what a sprint backlog is a sprint backlog is a filtered down view of your backlog at a specific sprint. So you can see that I have my iteration path column here. That's telling me which sprint each of these stories is assigned to. And I can assign a story to a sprint simply by dragging and dropping it. And now that thing is now part of Sprint 74. And if I want to go click on Sprint 74 here, I'm now given a new view, and that view is now showing me only the work items on my backlog that are a part of Sprint 74, which is a pretty simple way for me to be able to go in sprint planning. And actually, this is basically the view we start out yesterday, or actually not yesterday, today's Thursday already. Monday was sprint planning for my team. And they sat down with all the stories I had moved in to the sprint ahead of time. It was like, hey, this is my best guess of what I'd like to get done this sprint. What do you guys think? And the team will basically go through that list, and anything they can't fit, they'll just drag and drop to Sprint 75, because obviously there's only so much work a team can do. So that's essentially how the sprint backlog works. In addition, once you have sprint backlogs, you're able to do what's called decomposition. Some teams don't want to just work off of cards. Cards are totally valid. We totally believe in the lean viewpoint, where you just take a single card and you move it through all of the workflows. And we can talk a little bit more when I get into Kanban about that. But some teams actually want to do tasks. An hourly breakdown of the cards. Each team is a little different. In this team, you can see we've already done that a little bit. I'll expand that. You can see there's some cards that have individual work items in it. And the way that you do that is pretty simple. You just go right to a story, you click the little plus button, and that brings up your task work item. I'm sorry if there's some performance issues. We've got a little latency coming from Europe, and I didn't move the entire MS Engine to the new European data center. So here's my task. And you can see from my task, I can do things like put my estimates, my remaining, completed. Say the original estimate was 8 hours. I've got 8 remaining. I'm assigning it to myself or whatever. And I click save, and now that is another task on my team's sprint backlog. And of course, because I have hours, our roll-up of how many hours are in the team's work are going to change. So if I turn on, actually, let me show you this first. I can see this as a board view, which is a nice way of looking at it. So if you want to do a stand-up, and you want to run that stand-up based on each of the story, you've got a visual way of showing the workflow and how that work moves, and I can easily move these tasks from one column to another, drop that there, and that is going to save. It's all doing under the hood is changing the state model. It's just a visual UI to help us do simple work that teams know and love. And I'm also able to set capacity. So my team is able to go in and actually do capacity planning. Now, if you look here, this team isn't actually doing capacity planning. My team doesn't believe in hours. We don't really do tasks. Tasks, if anything, are to-do items. We do zero costing. We do zero story pointing. We've worked together for 14, 15 months. We know what we can get done, and we just go and do it. Let me move over to another team that literally sits next to us. This is their team's sprint, their backlog, and you can look at their sprint backlog, which is obviously scoped down. The red ones here are bugs, by the way. One of the new features that we've just released is the ability of putting bugs on your task board, and you can flip that on quite easily. The teams want to actually, in this situation, they're not using the Scrum template, they're using the Agile template, and they want to be able to put bugs in the backlog, so we've enabled that for them. They actually use a huge amount of task planning. If you look here, other than the bugs, all the rest of the stories have large number of tasks, and most of them are not done because we just started the sprint. And they have capacity planning that they do quite heavily. Whoa, they didn't actually copy their capacity over. Let's copy it now. This is the new sprint. They haven't actually copied. They just started the new sprint this week. They obviously didn't go in and do their sprint planning. But what they can do is they click copy now, and that'll bring the hours from the previous sprint. So every sprint, you don't have to sit there doing all of the work to actually write the right hours into your team's capacity. In addition, with your capacity, you can mark what days off you have. So if I wanted to give Abu Fati a day off, I can go in here, he can go enter his own vacation days, and those will actually be removed from the allocation of how much time they have to commit during that sprint. And frankly, we know that teams have morale events and things where our holidays where the entire team's off. We support that as well. And what you'll see now that we have capacity is we have this work item pane. And the work item pane, oops, let me save the capacity there. You can see in the work item pane, we show how many hours of work we've actually accumulated based on what's on our sprint backlog. In this case, there were 67 and a half hours, and there were 390 hours available out of our capacity. And I can start taking these work items and assigning it to individuals. So let's assume for a moment, I know that they haven't done all of their planning, so they're not quite done yet, but let's assume for a moment that Matt's overloaded and we need to assign that to Christopher. I can just drag that and drop that on Christopher, and now that work item is assigned to him. And everything in the allocations will automatically update as soon as that work item gets changed. And I better move that back, otherwise they're going to get annoyed at me. Matthew Cole. Boom. So that's a quick look at our sprint backlog. Any questions about sprint planning and how the backlog tools work for that? I'm going to keep going quickly unless people slow me down because they want to know more detail. It's got a lot of different stuff. All right. So, aside from sprint planning, one of the other things we have is the idea of portfolio backlogs that we were talking about. So, if you look here on the left, there are three different levels of backlogs, because that's what we're actually using inside the developer division. Stories, for us, are basically the items that teams are going to go out and work off of. Pretty simple from that perspective. Features are the things we actually deliver on the service. So, and I'll show you examples of these in a moment. And scenarios are kind of the marketing things that we're going to talk about, the back of the box, like we say, features that are kind of what are the value propositions of Visual Studio Online, et cetera. So if I look at the scenarios backlog, I can see a list of all the scenarios my team is assigned. These are the five scenarios that this invent team is responsible for. Is the font large enough? Do you need me to increase the font size? No? Looks good? Okay, cool. So in this case, there are five different stories, and just like any other backlog, I can add additional scenarios to that. So here's my tech ed scenario, and I can move that, and again, it's just another backlog. It's just at a higher level using a different set of work item types in the same context of the team. And each team can have scenarios, and there could be a scenario, some organizations choose to have a centralized team created just for the scenarios. You can kind of think of it as the management team or the planning team. And they'll go create all the scenarios, and the teams can then map their work to a centralized set. In our case, we let the teams own the scenarios that they're contributing to. But in our world, we want to have multiple levels. We also have features. The stories is the backlog itself. We have the scenarios. And then we also have features, which is another one. These are the things I'm planning on releasing as value props to our customer. But these are all independent units. Backlog A, backlog B, backlog C. How do they get related together? Well, first, we have ways of doing drill up and drill down. So let's say I want to find out all of the work that's contributing to a scenario. I can start from the scenario backlog up here, and by clicking down to the stories, that you see there's a little hover effect over here, you can click down to that, and that'll show you a hierarchical view of all of the scenarios, and let me minimize that. Here's all the scenarios, and I can open up the scenarios and see all of its features, and I can open up a feature and see all of its stories. So you can easily see the hierarchical relationship between these different work items. And this allows you to get a roll-up, because these things don't have to be on the same team. They could be on any different team. So if my upper manager, Brian Harry, wants to go see everything his organization's working on, he can go look at all the scenarios that are under the organization. He can drill down to all the stories. Why he wants to see the stories that are on the team's backlog is beyond me, but he's able to go do that. He probably cares more about the features and when they're actually going to be lit up and delivered on the service. And just like with sprint planning, you're able to decompose these as well. So let's say I want to add a new feature under the tech ed scenario. I can go there. The same exact UI has been releveraged here, so you don't have to learn a whole bunch of new UIs. You click plus. You get your work item is, here's the tech ed feature, and away you go. And now I've got a feature under that scenario. Now, what if you want to go the other way? What if you care about how does this existing set of stories relate up to a bunch of work that's on other organizations? You could do that as well. You do that by going to stories, and you drill up to the scenarios. So what this is going to do is only show me my team set of stories in the context of the world, whereas the other one saying, show me the context of the world and show me all the stories underneath it. So there's a slight difference in the way that those two views are, and some users get a little confused there. So, hey, why is my story not showing up? It might be because you're looking at it from the wrong perspective, either the top down or bottom up. So the question is, can you have scenarios spanning multiple teams, or do you? Yes, absolutely. We have scenarios spanning multiple teams all over the place. Most of our scenarios can't be done by a single feature team. So I'll give you an example. The Agile backlog. To do this exact feature we were talking about, the up-down type of view, there's a team that owns the UI, the same team that owns the backlog and all of those management pieces. But at the same time, the work item underlying subsystem, there has to be special SQL stuff done. There has to be changes to the way our query engine runs. That's a different team. That's another team I own called the Modern WIT team. So there's two different teams contributing to the single scenario. They each have their own features, they each have their own stories underneath those features, and they roll up into a single scenario. And there's many, many scenarios that are spanning many, many, many teams for very large scale initiatives. You can imagine as we did Azure Active Directory support, there were 5, 6, 7 different teams across our organization that had to have work there. So this is a way to actually give a single person or a set of people views into all of the work that's getting done and be able to visually represent that. So the question is, how do you define which teams contribute? Again, that's up to the organization. At the end of the day, the way we visualize that, if that's your question, is the area path. We have our area paths mapped to our team hierarchy. So the 4 teams under the Agile feature crew are shown under Agile, and Agile is a part of TFS, and TFS is a part of Visual Studio Cloud Services, and that's part of DevDiv, and we've got a hierarchy that way. And the area path represents that. How do we determine which teams do the work? That's a whole different set of questions that we can go into offline. Cool? Any other questions while we're here? So we've talked about decomposition, but let's say I'm looking at my set of stories here. I'm going to go the other way. Stories up to scenarios. And if I minimize, I can see a bunch of stories at the bottom here that don't have any parents. One of those stories right now is the Welcome to Tech Ed Europe. I never gave it a parent. Well, yes, I could go in and I could open up the work items and find the IDs and go into our link experience and add a parent. But who really wants to do that? That's not fun for us, and we wrote the thing. So we had to come up with a way of taking, instead of doing decomposition, of mapping stories to features, features to scenarios, etc. So if you go to this button up here, this is where you turn on or off your mapping panel. And the mapping panel allows you to see a list of all of the next level up, in this case, since we're looking at stories, we're the next level up with features, so it's showing you all the features for a given team. And I can choose which team I want to look at. So right now I'm looking at the Invent team, but I can go browse to another team's list. So maybe I'm contributing to another team's feature, or this feature is contributing to another team's scenario. I can easily do that from the mapping panel. And all I have to do, once again, how are we going to make it map? We're going to drag and drop. So if I go Welcome to Tech Ed, I drop that onto wherever the Tech Ed story is. Tech Ed feature, there we go. And now I've got those things mapped. That makes sense, how our mapping works? Great. There are a couple other things that we didn't talk about. We have a couple other views, like instead of using this UI, you can go use this UI over here to do the mapping up and down. It's just another way of doing the same thing. One of the other features we've introduced fairly recently is the ability to hide progress items that are in progress. So let's say you're one of the things some teams care about is some teams only want to look at the future. They're trying to do their planning. They don't want to touch the stuff that's in progress. They only want their backlog to represent the things that have not actually been started yet. Well, you can easily do that by just clicking the hide button, and that's going to actually hide any items that are currently in progress. So if that's a view that's important to you, we have an answer for that as well. We didn't get into forecasting here, but forecasting is basically a way of saying, if you have a certain number of story points each sprint, so let's say you know you can do 10 or 12 story points in a sprint, you can actually turn on forecasting and say, hey, I'm going to have a velocity of 12 story points, and it will overlay on top of the view lines letting you know where they are. My team doesn't do story points, which is why this thing isn't working for us right now. I think this team might, so let me double check. Every team, and one of the nice things about Agile is we're constantly changing the way we do things. So some teams like this one used to be nonstop story pointers. They were very, very rigid in terms of following Agile. But apparently they've decided to change things. And that's one of the nice things about our organization. We try to do new things. It's one of the core concepts of Agile is trying new things constantly and seeing if they work. Reevaluating your processes and techniques and see, do these actually matter to me anymore? So apparently they stopped doing story pointing, so that ruins my demo. But anyway, so we've talked a lot about this view in terms of backlogs. What are other ways we can actually view our backlog? Well, one of the key ways we view our backlog is through a Kanban chart. And what the Kanban chart allows us to do is see a visual representation similar to our story, our task boards, which are at a user story to task level. I'd like to see that same representation at my story level. And I can do that simply by switching from the backlog to the board view on any one of your backlogs. So here I'm seeing my representation for my stories. I can go look at that for my features. I can go look at it for my scenarios. Every one of them has a Kanban visualization. And what's nice about the Kanban visualization, if you go back and look at these column headers here, is those are not the same states that I use as the work item. I'm using proposed, committed, approved, done, etc. But my team cares about things like, what's on our sprint backlog? What is actually in progress? What are we actually coding? What are we testing? And the Kanban chart allows me to customize those things and make them specific to the team. And at the end of the day, those Kanban columns are mapped to states. So if you go to the Customize Column dialog, this is where you'll see the ability of making all these columns. So I can click the plus button and add a tech ed column, and now that's going to show up as a column inside my UI. And I can move work items into that without a problem. If I can find the tech ed one, I'll move that over there. Boom. Another thing you can do through your customization of columns is you can set up WIP limits, work in progress limits. How many work items do you want to allow in this column before the column goes red and kind of sets off those warning bells because your team isn't really following the proper lean proper lean methodologies? We have support for that with the WIP limits. You can just set that here. And we also say, how many items can you see? Maybe you got a huge backlog of 1,000 items because you've got everything you could ever think of on that list. You don't want to see all that in the visualization. We allow you to customize that. And finally, you can see the mapping. Because at the end of the day, you still want to have states for all of your work items. You can't really avoid it. That's how you do roll-up. That's how you do higher-level reporting inside of our cube and our data warehouse. So all these Kanban states need to map to specific work item states, and you can see that here. Now, if we go over to the Agile XX team and look at their board, they've chosen to have bugs on their board as well. And the way they've done that, real quickly, is if they go to settings, there's now a new setting for the team, where not only do you say which days the team works, which helps you for actually building your burn down correctly, but you also can say if you want to track bugs on this thing. This is very different than what we had before. In the past, only the Scrum template had bugs on the backlog, and you had to go into WIT admin and do a whole bunch of customization. Now it's purely a checkbox. So every one of the, you can have your, if you could be a CMMI customer or a custom process template and do it. We have a question over there? Wait, there's a mic coming. I can hear you. It's all right. I'll repeat it.
So the question is there a possibility to customize the width of the columns from the board? Because we have one team with eight or so states, and the board looks quite ugly.
Yeah, it does. Not today, unfortunately. The logic for those is pretty terrible. We know that, and it's on our backlog. We actually have a very, very large backlog of things we want to do to improve the Agile system, and that's the board layout is a huge one. One of the things we're considering is like, hey, let me go back to the view. And we don't know our final answer yet, so this is not a plan of record or anything, but why is the done column, the one all the way to the right, as wide as everything else? Do you really need to see the card so big? What about the new column? Do you need as much detail? You're probably not assigning those ahead of time. So we're looking at ways of actually doing some more dynamic UI based on context. We're experimenting, and we'll have a better answer for that. But right now, there's no customization, unfortunately, for the width of the columns. So here is the board for the Agile X team. They've checked that checkbox. Oh, sorry. Question over here. the question is basically, what's happening under the hood to get these bugs showing up here? So we're basically doing the exact same thing you did manually through customization. We're just doing it dynamically. So we've removed the bug from the requirements category in the Scrum template, and we now will dynamically add it or remove it based on that checkbox. So what you have now will still work. We're not changing the bugs themselves. We're just changing the categories of which the bug appears in. You won't need to do anything. During upgrade, we're going to fix it for you and automatically set that setting. So we're going to be smart about that. At least I hope we are. So we've got, this team has got bugs. They have a lot more columns. They're just a little bit more rigid than the invent team is. That's okay. We support that. So again, the Kanban is there to allow both teams to do anything the way that they want. So we talked about Kanban. Next topic is tagging. So one of the other things is like, hey, I want to be able to mark things in a special way. So tags allow us to do that. So if I go back to my backlog, you can see there's a column called tags. You can see here, this team has a whole bunch of tags they use. And most of this stuff is gibberish to you, and frankly, it should be gibberish to you because it's specific to the team. If I want to go in and add a tag, I can see the visualization there, but I can go, we go back to this story here where it's not going to hurt anybody. Delete that column so the team doesn't freak out later. I'll do it later. So if I go here, you'll see that there's a tags control at the top of every single work item. And this exists in Visual Studio as well as inside of Web Access. So you can see this from both the rich client as well as the web experience. And from there, I could just add a tag. And as I start typing, let's say I want to make this thing blocked. You'll see that it's a not an MRU list, but an autocomplete list that's going to start filtering itself down, showing you all the tags that already exist in the system. So I can pick one of those and say, okay. Or if I have a new one, maybe I call it the tech ed tag. Ooh, tech ed Justin. There we go. Doesn't exist. Click OK. And as soon as I save it, that tag will be automatically created into the system. And yes, project administrators can lock down whether or not anybody can create tags. But by default, anyone who can create work items can go add tags to the system. So once I go add that tag, I can do a couple of cool things. One is from the backlog. Actually, I'll go here. From the backlog, I can actually put a filter experience, and it'll show me all the tags that are being used in that current view. So in this case, I've got 46 items that have engineering, 11 items that have perf, 9 for process template, et cetera. And I can start breaking down or filtering down this view based on those tags. So let's see all the items that have engineering. I click on that, and the backlog updates. You'll notice that the order still shows you the original order of the work items relatively to itself, as well as the order column showing you the actual order. So you know as you're moving things, things actually are in between those numbers. In addition, you can keep on drilling further. So now let's say I want to see all the engineering tag items. Well, there we are. So you can actually do those filters as part of your backlog experience. And if you go to your queries experience, actually let's go back here. One of the things you can also do from a backlog is you can create a query off of it. So here's the create query button. It goes and just creates a query. I'll just go create that quickly. I'll follow the link to view it. So now I'm looking at the exact same view, but in the query editor. Most of you are familiar with this. This is how you can bring your backlog into Visual Studio and see that, because the backlog experience is a web-only experience. Here's how your devs can look at it in VS. But now let's say I want to go do the filtering there. The same exact functionality exists for all queries. So I can go take that query, look for engineering, look for tags, and there we go. Same exact thing. Not only can you filter, but you could query off of tags. So if I want to instead have this view, but I'm, instead of doing filtering, I want to get those same work items, I can go to the editor of this query, and I can go through all of the crazy different clauses of this. I wish I chose a simpler one. And say tags contains engineering. Play that back, and now I should have 40... Oh, put on the wrong clause. See, this is what happens when I use large queries. And tags contains engineering. And now we went down to the 46. If I add a second one, tags contains tags. Now I get it down to the 2 originally. So I can do it either way. Any questions about tagging? They're really meant to be everybody does whatever they want. That's really the goal. We don't want to put rules in place on, oh, these are the only tags you can use, et cetera. Yes, to what our future vision hold, we want to do more with tags. You can imagine that we start showing tags on our boards We actually can do coloring on your tags. There's a whole slew of features that we want to go build, and this is kind of just the beginning. So now you can actually add and edit tags inside of VS. That was something that was a big new feature in one of our quarterly updates. We're going to keep doing more and more and more in that space. So the last set of features before we get into some of the really deep stuff, I want to talk about visualizing progress. Now, one of the things that's nice about all these views is we have charts and visualizations built in to each of the individual views. So you may have noticed that in the upper right-hand corner, when I'm looking at my team's backlog, I have a couple charts. The first is my velocity chart, letting me know how many story points have I actually completed sprint over sprint. And you can see sprint 70, we did story points, then we kind of stopped doing it on this team. If you go to the Agile Experience team, We go to the Agile Experience team, we'll go back to their backlog. I do not need to save that query. And I look at their velocity over time, they stopped them as well. But if you were doing sprints, you were doing story points, you would see that one as well. Next one is the idea of a CFD, or a cumulative flow diagram. This is a chart to let you kind of know how much work is actually in progress. And the idea is you want to keep that to a minimum. You don't want to start letting that ballooning out of control. So we have that chart built right in. And if you want, you can actually customize that right from this UI. And the customizations we support there are basically letting you know what the start date is. So if you want to see a CFD for the last 10 days or the last 15 days, we actually support that. By default, we're going to give you for the last 9 months, I think. We're actually in the last 30 weeks. That's what it was. Yeah, so the question is, or the comment is, this chart is pretty useless because the close starts to take over. I agree with you, but if you talk to a whole bunch of people that are very Kanban focused, they will say this is the only thing that ever matters. So it depends on your individual team and your workflow. We want to support all of them, and we're not saying you have to use everything. I personally have never found any value out of this chart, and I was the one that authored it. So go figure. So those are a couple views that we have. If you go back to your sprint backlog, we also have a burn down chart. So you can go right from your sprint, not only see the days, that's a pretty picture right there, but you can see your chart of how much work you have allocated. So if you have hourly based work, this is a really important chart to see because we're going to show you day by day how many hours are remaining, and we'll give you an ideal trend line. And that ideal trend line is basically saying if you were to burn down an equal amount of work every single day, what would that line look at? So you can basically compare where you're at versus where you should be, and it's kind of a rough metric. Not the best metric in the world, not the only one you should be worrying about, but it is a good one from an Agile perspective. If you go, one of the things I didn't show is if you go back in time to previous sprints, you can still see their backlogs and you can see their burn down charts as well of how they actually worked sprint over sprint. So let me see if I can find the sprint that actually had one. It's been a while since I did this demo and apparently, oh, there we go. I just missed it. Sprint 68. Oh, this one will work too. So you can see this is in sprint 69 what that team did. And they actually did a pretty good job during that sprint. Started with 200 plus hours and they burned down pretty consistently throughout. Another great metric. But we've gone beyond just these simple burn down and Kanban style charts. We've actually built a whole homepage where you can get all the charts you want. So the homepage is going to have your burn down. It's going to have your capacity chart by default. But you can go and pin additional work items and different queries and builds and tests, et cetera, and have additional charts. So from what my team really cares about is obviously we care about the quality of the build. Is the build broken? Are we able to actually ship our software? So we have actually pinned a build definition to our homepage to show the team, hey, this is something we actually care about. There are a couple queries that are really important to us. How many bugs do we actually not triage? And triage for us means you put a tag that said triaged on it. So we have a simple query that we store the query and we pin it to the homepage. We don't need to know much more detail about it because it's just an on or off type of operation. But there are other times where I want to know, who is the work assigned to? In the past, you could just have, hey, there were 7 work items on your team. Now we've introduced lightweight charting where you can see vivid charts showing you whatever metrics you want for a given query. So in this case, we've taken our active bugs query, divided up by area, and we know there's 62 total bugs, 23 are in this IMS sync feature, whatever that is, 9 are in lightweight charts, etc. And we allow you to make a whole slew of charts. And the way you do that is if you actually click on one of these, it brings you to the query. So the first thing is you have to create a query. After you create the query, there's a little tab called Charts. And the Charts tab will show you all the charts that are actually created for that query. Now, a couple things about licensing and permissions here. You need to have one of the premium licenses of TFS to create charts, but everybody is able to view them, including the stakeholders, if you have that free stakeholder license. The other thing to know is only team administrators, the people who are responsible for the team, are able to pin those charts to their team homepage, because we don't want everybody putting random metrics on that page. So we give you a way of locking down, but if you want everyone to, make everyone a team admin. That's really all the team admin does. So you can see a couple of examples of charts here. I've got a pie charts, I've got bar charts letting me know what release the bugs are in, I have stacked bar charts letting me know assigned to by type, I have pivot charts to let me know, hey, here's all the people and all the different areas and who's working in which area so I can see where I'm spending my money. We have trend charts now, so you can see over a period of time how you've done for this specific query. We're basically running that query every single day in through time to build that view for you. So it takes a little bit longer to render, but they're pretty snappy. And you can do that as an area or a stacked area chart. So there's a lot of different things you can go do and visualize. And all you have to do is say, pin to homepage, go back to your homepage, and that item will be there. And you can then, once I go scroll down, I can go move that around and put it exactly where I want to. So it's pretty easy to do that. So let me remove that really quickly, and let me go back to a chart and show you how to actually create one of these charts. So from the charts screen, there's a little button, surprisingly, called New Chart. And when you go to New Chart, it basically gives you options of first choosing what visualization you want, and we've got 8 different visualizations there. So you can choose which type you want. You can give the chart a name, so this is my tech ed chart. And again, the data behind this is what's in the query. So if it doesn't exist in the query, only what's in that query will show. And if you want to add more columns or change the filtering, you need to change the query parenting this. Is the data coming from the, where is the data coming from, really? So there is no warehouse in Visual Studio Online. All of this stuff is coming off the operational store. It's all transactional and live. So the moment you change a bug, that chart will be updated as soon as you click refresh on the screen, essentially. So there's no warehouse, there's no pre-rendering, there's no caching layers. It is all live, live, live right now. We might change that because of performance reasons, but that's the way it is for now. And if you have a warehouse on-prem, we don't use it. So this always is going to go off your operational store no matter what you want to do. So that's one of the questions I get quite often. So back to the chart. If I want to choose one of these, all I do here is go to the drop-down, and this is showing me all of the columns that are available for that individual query, basically all the columns I've added to that query. So if I want a bar chart, or in this case a pie chart on substatus, there we go. And I can change, not only do I want to count work items, let's say one of the common things I want to do is I want to get, well this is a pretty simple one, and I can obviously change the order if it's sorting, ascending, or descending. I can go and I can customize colors by clicking on an area and changing the colors to whatever I want. Things along those lines are simple. But one of the ones I've heard a lot is like, well, what about other types of aggregations? What about instead of counting my work items, can I sum up things like remaining hours and build a burn down? Sure you can. You go to area, we can do sum, and we can say sum of what field? Oh, this is priority. Let me actually add, this is bugs. So let's, yeah, sum of priority. That means nothing, but we'll show it anyways for demo purposes. And then we're just summing up the priority field, and we know we have 130 priorities, whatever that is. You also have tooltips, so you can look at get the very granular pieces of information. For our trend charts, we let you choose the range of information you want to see. So we're not going to let you go crazy and give a start and end date, because since it is going off the operational store, that could get quite costly to collect. So we've chosen a few different operations or time ranges that are actually going to be pretty performant. So you can either get daily information for the last 7 days, 20 or 14 days, or 28 days, or you can get once a week for the last 12 weeks, or you can get once a month for the last year. So those are the different time ranges we allow. Really lightweight, easy way to get the team to visualize information. And one of the next things that we just started releasing, and you probably saw that in the recent release notes, is we've also done charts like this for test case management. So if you're using the test case system, you can actually get information about your pass-fail rates as a chart like this, and you can also get information such as what tests or what is my authoring, what tests, what stories do and do not have tests based on one of these charts. And those features just got turned on this last week on Visual Studio Online, and they're also in the box for quarterly update 4. So if you install quarterly update 4, you get all the trending charts were new for quarterly update 4, and test case charts were new for quarterly update 4. And you can imagine we're going to go do more and more and more charts with build and code and agile, et cetera, as we get more resources over time. It's all on our backlog. So any questions about charting? I think I got through all of it. Yeah. Let's get the mics. It's getting harder for me to hear. It is really loud out there.
Can I read a file to chart the bugs?
Can you make this chart your bugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have it chart any work item type. You can have it chart test cases, which is a work item type.
Can I read a file with a lot of bugs?
Sorry, can you?
I'm sorry. In the VSO, can I read a file to chart?
You want to like save it as a picture type of thing?
I want to load a file in the Visual Studio with bugs.
You want to load a file? I'm not sure I really understand the scenario there.
Can I export?
Can you export it? So it's on our backlog. One of the features we want to be able to do is get the data into a CSV so you can go do this in Excel. We want to give you the data raw as a table, and we want to be able to give it to you as an image. Those things are on the backlog, but they don't exist today.
Read and export a file.
Yeah. It's all on the backlog, unfortunately.
Where I can read the...
So you can't read it directly. There's no file right now.
It's direct.
You can read. There are REST APIs to be able to read that data, and we'll actually show those in a couple of minutes. But there's no file backing it per se. These are not Excel workbooks or anything like that. We're rendering all of this on the fly.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
So we showed a lot about charting here. Starting to run out of time, so I want to get to customization because this is for some of the geeks in the room. This is a fun one. So there are a couple things I want to mention about customization. WitAdmin is a command line tool.
Before you start with the changing,
yep.
I just in terms of metrics, there's one metric I was interested in, which is basically how long it takes moving more in terms of Kanban. Mm-hmm. So how long does it take to take one item from the beginning to the end?
Some kind of metric which I've been unable to get.
So we were talking about other metrics that we can have. One of the key metrics that you just mentioned was the idea of cycle time. How long it takes from start to finish, or how long does it take to go from one state to another? And we're kind of showing that in the CFD, but we haven't exposed that as like a time-based chart. It's something that's on our backlog, and we're really interested in doing that soon. Because that is one of the most important metrics for an Agile team. It's what we measure ourselves on. It's how quickly can we ship something? So I'm right there with you. I just want to get the resources to go do it.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about customization quickly. WitAdmin is our command line tool. It comes in the box. You can read all about it on MSDN. It's actually one of the better papers that we have on MSDN about it. There's lots of different types of customizations you can do, from adding fields to work items, to creating new work item types, changing workflows, et cetera. I'm not going to be able to go through all of it today, but I do want to go through a key one, which is how do you add a portfolio backlog? How do you add something new? If you, by default, you only get your requirement or your user story and feature, one level when you have a Visual Studio Online account, same thing on-premise. We don't allow the customization on Visual Studio Online, so all of these WitAdmin functionalities are completely disabled for Visual Studio Online customers. We are working at fixing that problem, and we'll get there, and you'll see updates, and we'll be shouting it from the rooftops when we do. But in the meantime, this is only for on-premise customers. So basically, if you follow, there's a whole bunch of different documents here. Excuse me, on how to do customization. But I want to show you a quick one. We're basically, if we actually close up my files here, we're going to go to this VM here. So if you look here, F5 because I removed it. Yeah, so right now you can see there's two levels to this backlog. There's backlog items and there's features. How do I go add a third called initiative? Well, there's basically a bunch of different commands you need to do, but more importantly, you need to look at what is the changes that actually get made inside of the files. So if you use WitAdmin, and I will send out the link with the slides to all of this information, you basically are going to do a whole bunch of export commands to change the work item types, and then a whole bunch of import commands to bring the new ones in. So the first thing we want to do is go create an initiative. An initiative is a new work item type, and I'm going to base that off of feature. So if I look at the feature, I'm going to do a comparison right now showing what feature looked like in initiative. So here's what the feature looked like. And basically, the only difference is I copied the entire XML, which if you haven't used WitAdmin before, you'll get to know and love, hate, whatever you want to think of it. And we basically replaced the word feature with the word initiative. I'm not going crazy and doing anything else anywhere here. That's the first step. The second step is to, now that I've done that, I have to go into my categories. And categories are kind of the thing we use to drive a whole bunch of our experiences. And I have to say, I'm going to go make a new category called initiatives. Because, frankly, that's what's important. I want to make this new initiative work item type. And then lastly, you want to be able to go over to your process configuration, which is, again, another API to give you this XML. And we're going to go create the new backlog. So what this is basically saying is, go create a new backlog driven by that initiative category. And I'm going to call the things on it initiatives. Here are all the states that I want to show and a mapping of these meta states. We have three meta states in our portfolio, new, in progress, and done. Basically, you could think of them as left column, right column, and everything in between. What are the states that this initiative work item type has, and how does it map to those? And then what columns do you want to show on that backlog? And then, of course, what required fields there are. In this case, we only have title. That's what we're doing here. The last little piece that some people forget about and don't quite read in the documentation is you need to go to the feature, and you have to, oops, I also gave the initiative a color. It's very exciting. The other one right here is you have to be able to tell feature that the feature is going to have a parent, and that parent is going to be the initiative backlog. So three pretty simple steps. Create the new work item type, create a category that includes the work item type, and add a portfolio backlog in those three XMLs. And basically, if I pull up this nice Word doc, this text file that I did ahead of time, these are the three calls I made. First is going to be import WITD, which is basically taking that XML file that I had and putting it into the system. Next, I'm going to import the categories, which again, it's an XML file. I'm just uploading that into the server into my existing project. And then the last one is I'm going to import the process configuration. And to get those files, it's the exact same command with just export instead of import. And that's how I got the text file ahead of time and edited it. So now that we've done those things, I don't have to restart IIS. I don't have to do anything other than F5 in my browser. And you'll now see that that initiative backlog appears right here. And I can go to that, and I can go start creating new initiatives right away. 1, 2, 3, 4. And if I wanted to do mapping features to that, I can actually bring up the mapping pane, and you can see that the features now map to initiatives. And I can just drag and drop those as well.
We are using similarly a hierarchy for initiatives. We call it epics, user stories, right?
Yep.
And our business analysts find that this view is insufficient because it doesn't show their scope. They're working on releases, mm-hmm. and they need to take epics and put them from the main backlog into releases. Thanks. And the development group needs to take user stories or epics and put it into their iteration. So it doesn't show a hierarchical view, and it only has a current release or current iteration while our teams are working on multiple right. releases.
Yeah, I think that is fair feedback, and it's one of the things we call release planning. It is a feature that we haven't really fully built yet, but we see there's a lot of value in that. We see a lot of customers planning over multiple releases, and not just release managers, but individuals on the team need to be able to map their stories to the release they're being delivered in, and we need to build some better experiences for that.
So this view is basically designed for the development group and not for the business analyst and the product management.
This is designed for, I want to manage my entire organization and see all the work that's being done. It's not about when I'm releasing it. That is a completely another feature we have to go build. So I'm kind of running out of time here, but I'll do this quickly. One last demo, because I think it's interesting to note, is we have REST APIs. And REST APIs are something new that we have for Visual Studio Online. These are only in Visual Studio Online right now. They will come in the next version of Visual Studio and TFS on-premise when we come out. But basically, the REST APIs are the new way to work with the work item system. And we have really, really good documentation. If you go to integrate.visualstudio.com, we have a full set of docs that I've written talking about all the things you can do with work items, whether it's creating work items, linking work items, editing work items, using queries, executing queries, etc. It basically covers all, other than customization, which is coming, it covers all the spectrum. So if you're interested in building apps and you want to have custom tooling, the REST APIs are a really good set of ways of accessing the data. You don't have to worry about our old SOAP APIs. You don't have to worry about the object models. You don't have to worry about authorization. We have all of that working in the new modern way using OAuth, service hooks, and REST APIs. So I'm not going to be able to show these today, but there are really, really good examples in the documentations. So if you wanted to look at, for instance, creating a work item, I can go to the work items API, and I can follow, where is it, create a work item. Huh, that's weird, this links to nothing. Anyway, so if I go to the work item UI, you can see individual call and requests and responses, and you can get really good information on how to do all of this. And there's a lot of apps coming out using this, and we're pointing all of our customers in VSO to use this for all the future apps. So that's one thing. We didn't really have enough time to go into it, but I wanted to mention that and give you a quick plug for that. So with that, we've kind of gone through the lap I wanted to do very quickly. I know this was rapid. I know this was fast, and there was a lot of information. But I wanted to basically give you guys an introduction to the whole Agile suite. And I'm absolutely happy afterwards to talk to go more in depth. And we've got more time at the booth as well where we can just do one-on-ones. But for the last 10 minutes of the talk, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about our process and what we've done. And again, some of this is going to be, much of this is going to be a repeat from the Tuesday talk. So basically, just trying to speed up here, we have three roles at Microsoft that we work off of. We have program managers, developers, and testers. It's the kind of the PMs do the what, the devs do the how, and the QA is there to keep everybody back in check. This is pretty consistent through the rest of Microsoft organizations as well. We report up through our own reporting structure. So I report to PMs, PMs report to PMs all the way up to someone pretty high up. Because of that, we do have teams that are going to span multiple organizations or span the hierarchy. So we have to work together well. And teams generally are made up of a single PM, a dev lead with a bunch of devs underneath them, and then a QA lead with a bunch of QA reporting to them. So the teams are basically 8 to 12 people. They're across the disciplines, and they work together for 12 to 18 months. So that's when we say a team, that's what our definition of team really is. We do work in three-week sprints, so we do planning at the beginning of the 3 weeks. We do grooming throughout, so I have, for my team, have a weekly meeting set up every Wednesday at 2 o'clock where I sit the team down and say, let's open up the backlog. And let's start going story by story and making sure if there's any questions, we answer them. That's where we fill those details out. That's when we look at the specs that are linked to those user stories and make sure everyone on the team is aware. So that when we get to the sprint planning, which is during the last week or the first day, depending on which week it is. This time I did it on Friday, so I didn't miss it. But usually we do it on Monday. The whole team knows everything. And it should be a 15-minute meeting of can we fit all of this work. It should not be a spec review. It should not be a time where we first start thinking about what we're going to do. Everyone's had opportunities to look at it and understand the priority. So as a team, we agree, and it's not just me force-feeding stuff as the PO to the team. We do have this magical fourth week, which is deployment, and that's purely there for integration tests. We have no planned work for that deployment area. So that's one of the questions we often get. Like, how do you actually do deployments? Do you deploy the day after sprint ends? No, we do go through a staging environment and a production environment, and there are some of our QA members are responsible for doing some smoke testing there, but there's absolutely nothing other than critical bug fixes that go there, and we obviously don't want to plan for those. At the beginning of the sprint, we want to do communication. We tell the entire organization what are we doing, and we send out an email outlining our plan. And at the end of the sprint, we send another email outlining what did we actually do. And here's examples of those emails. When you get the slides, you can go more in depth on those. They're really there as a key way of communicating out to the entire organization, which is one of the key things in Agile. A lot of people think about Scrum of Scrums as a way of communicating. We don't think that gives us enough detail. We really want to have a very transparent information that we can share very broadly with the team. And this probably is the most valuable thing we've done for communication, these two simple emails. Another thing that we do is what we call team chats. Every three sprints, we sit down as an organization for a full day. Each team has a 15-minute slot, and they're basically there to answer three questions. What's next on your backlog? What debt do you have accumulated? And are there any issues you want to make management aware of? And this is not a team-to-team communication. This is not me playing telephone and telling my manager who will tell his manager who tells his manager. This is me talking directly to upper management and saying, this is the state of our world. This is what we're working on. Do you have feedback for us? Is there something we need to do to load balance or to reallocate resources across the organization or change our priorities? Because this is the way we think of the world. And it's another great way that it's a great tool for communication to make sure we're all on the same page.
So
Yeah. Every single person that's in our leadership chain is sitting in that meeting. Okay. So it is each team. You don't want the entire team of 12 people to show up at that meeting. Generally, it's the leads, the PM, the dev lead, and the test lead show up. And they have a 15-minute slot where they have a PowerPoint with three slides, the exact three slides that I talked about before. And then across, we have a link meeting set up, so anyone who wants to can listen in. I don't want most of the devs in the team spending 8 hours listening to this every 3 or every 9 weeks, but they're welcome to if they want to. Most of the PMs across, or the product owners, do sit in on this just because they want to get visibility across the team, or at least they look at the agenda and say, oh, I'm working with this team. I have dependencies on this team. So you can listen to their session to make sure your stuff is represented correctly. And then on the other side of the table is the entire leadership chain. So that's about 20 people in our organization, from Brian Harry on and his managers and their managers. So all of the engineering managers are there for the entire time because you want that whole leadership team to actually see what's going on. We do constant planning. So we do planning at the 3-week increment for our sprints. We do it at the 6-month or seasonal planning for all the stuff that we're currently working on from a priority. And we also do it at the 18-month period, where we think about what are the bigger initiatives we want to go solve as an organization. The interesting thing is, while we're doing all these things, and at a point in time, it might look something like this, where at the beginning of spring, we're going to look 18 months out, have a big doc describing our scenarios. We're going to come up with a plan for the next 6 months. But the reality is it's a rolling window. So as soon as we finish 6 months, we do it all over again. So we're constantly updating and refining. We're not throwing it out. We're not starting over. We're just refining with the new information as the market has changed. One of the other things we do, one of the other things I want to show is our work items. I showed you them all throughout the session today, but I actually put copies of them here in case you actually want to take it back to your team and look at them. We've got scenarios, features, user stories, and tasks. Those are our 4 work item types. We have just a couple more minutes. The question over there? Yeah.
Yeah. The question is about how do you track the work that's been done on the 4th week there during deployment?
How do we track the week during deployment? The same way you track anything else. We have user stories and tasks, and generally we start with 0. There should be no work planned other than a checklist.
But do you assign that to the current sprint or to the next sprint?
It's not. It's assigned to the next sprint just for time, but it's not a sprint set of operations. If we could do it the early sprint earlier, we would, but we have to basically, someone is responsible for kicking off the final build and doing the fork. Someone's responsible, there's a checklist of operational things. None of them are very time intensive other than the 1 hour of smoke testing each feature team is supposed to do. And we generally track them. Each team does it differently, but generally we'll do it with tasks. Sorry, the microphone's coming, so.
So when you put your 3-week sprints to calendar, you have 3 weeks, and then you have a week between sprints, if you look in the calendar.
Yep.
Is that how you do it?
Yep. It's not a week between. It overlaps with the next week. So week 1 is the same as week 4. They're the same week. We don't want much, and I do this for clarity, we don't plan significant work. It is less than a day total of work in that dark blue box up there for our deployment. It is really about going through the motions, putting it on environments, and smoke testing. It is not a time to be discovering bugs. It is not a time to be finding and shoving in more work. Everything is done. Only if there's an absolutely stopping critical issue will we have a dev fix a bug. And obviously, we want to do that because we're deploying. This is going out live. But every team is responsible during the 3 weeks of doing all of that work. It's not like, oh, well, I've got extra time. I'm going to defer it. I'm not going to do integration tests later. No. This is really a smoke test operation, not a defer work operation. So we got to be careful there. So I showed you all of our work item types. We have those different layers where we have user stories and tasks, the team items, those pairing up to features, which are the things we ship. And then scenarios are kind of the large initiatives that we talk about in a release that kind of map to our scenario planning that we do. And here's examples of all 4 of those, and you pretty much saw all of those today. But these will be in the slides if you want to bring it back to your team and do a comparison. One other thing we do is what we call scenario reviews. So when we have these new scenarios come out, we basically build a pretty slide deck that's a very, very fuzzy picture, but kind of is a guiding point of this is the type of thing we want to go build. and we'll actually review that similarly that we review our team chats. We'll actually go through and set up a separate meeting and say, hey, we're going to go through this scenario, we're going to walk through the 40 slides, and then we're going to figure out if this is the scenario we want to do, if this is a priority, we're going to allocate the work across teams. And then it's up to the product owners to refine and define all of the details in the story. But this is, again, another way of up-leveling the conversation and allowing the entire organization to get on the same page on how we do things. Once they actually complete that scenario review, that's when we make features on our backlog. Teams take those, they break them down into individual stories, et cetera. So that was kind of a really quick lap around our process. I had a big talk on that on Tuesday, so that goes into a lot more detail, but I just wanted to give kind of like the highlights of it for the people that didn't go there. But I definitely recommend you looking at that session if it's something your team would find interesting. Visual Studio Online is free. We highly recommend you signing up for an account. Everything I showed except for the customization is available there, and frankly, even if you're an on-prem customer, it's a great way of using it as a sandbox, playing around, seeing what's coming next. And frankly, if you might have the opportunity to convince your team to move to the cloud, which will save you a lot of ownership costs. You don't have to worry about doing another TFS upgrade, which we know is everyone's favorite thing to do in the world. We also have a bunch of features that are only on Visual Studio Online. We talked about a couple of them, but like our load testing, our application insights, continuous integration, and hosted build. There is a lot of additional value in our hosted product, so definitely check that out. I'm Justin Marks. I'll be here to answer more questions until they literally kick us out of the room. The video might stop in a couple minutes, but that's the way that is. You can always reach me on email, and I'm happy to have conversations after the fact. We're getting closer to the end, so here's a whole bunch of resources, other track resources. Definitely complete your evaluations. It's how they get me to come back to this thing year after year, so I hope you enjoyed the talk. And I'm here for questions if there's anything else. Thank you.